Hello and welcome back to another Cabincast Ramble. I'm Oliver and I'm joined by Tan.
Hello!
And we are here with more Steven Universe.
Indeed.
This being episode like, I've got it.
It's 40 here. Maybe?
Yeah, episode 40.
Yeah.
And we are coming towards the end of season 3. And indeed, we are dealing today with Bismuth. Probably just part one, unless we are incredibly rapid, which seems unlikely. So yeah, Bismuth part one, which is episode 20. Episode 98 of the overall show.
Exactly.
And interestingly, is it's kind of the first of... I mean, you can consider the Steven versus Amethyst stuff kind of an arc, but Bismuth is straight up one episode split into two parts. We then get Beta and Earthlings, which is a part one and a part two.
Yeah.
And then back to the Moon and Bubbled, which are different stories, but one very much continues directly on from the other. So we kind of get three two-parters right here at the end, but all in different styles.
Exactly. I like a good two-parter.
Which is interesting. So, yeah, this is probably going to be taking us up to episode 45, I would imagine, because there's quite a lot to talk about with all of these.
Indeed.
So where do we start off with this episode, Tan?
Well, last time in Steven versus Amethyst, we had Steven and Amethyst fighting because Amethyst had sort of an inferiority complex
kind of going on, yeah.
Yeah. Now, while it isn't like the focus of this episode, there is a little bit, just like slightly included.
Yes, sort of, yes.
Sort of, yeah. But this is very much a break from that. This starts off, they're playing a videos game. It's very
sure, yeah, video games.
It's very, very difficult. They're playing, I don't know, Dark Souls or something. but he dies and he says, dying a bunch in video games is emotionally exhausting. But of course, Steven's not died in real life, so he has no idea what that's like.
No, much worse, I'm sure, but...
Yes, probably.
Yeah.
Doing
the same thing over and over and over and over again can be emotionally exhausting. But interrupted by Lion, doing lion things.
Interrupted by Lion, pretty much being a big cat.
Being a big cat.
Trying to eat one of Steven's shirts. But as he does so the second time, Steven decides to put it in Lion's mane. And
yeah,
this is sort of where it begins, because in Lion's mane is a strange bubbled gem.
Indeed.
And as Steven falls off a branch that snaps, he lands on it and accidentally pops the bubble.
So, yeah, and there's a few things just to...
There are a lot of things in that in the mane now.
There's a bike, there's a scooter, there's a box of stuff. Rose's sword is still in here.
Yep.
Now, with its scabbard? I don't think it was always with its scabbard.
I am unsure.
I can't remember. And the flag. And there's a chest, which... Do we ever open the chest? I don't remember.
The chest is closed all the time until the movie, at which point it is opened, but we never find out what was inside.
That's so mean. And there's a bubble gem. Which has been here the whole time. But yeah, Thunderbird apparently is very important or something to Steven.
It's a ride. It's a roller coaster.
Um, That would make sense then. But yeah, he goes to put it up on a tree. And yeah, like you said, he falls and pops the bubble.
Exactly. The next thing we see is... Stephen, like, falls out of the main, and he says he's made a horrible mistake. And the next thing we see is game over. Which, if that isn't a foreshadowing, I don't know what it is. I guess you could say this is this episode's really a turning point, or perhaps a breaking point, of the show. This is where things change.
Yeah. In other news, Lion found a new shirt. But it's just a generic Steven shirt, so you know, there's a million of them.
There are a lot of those. They're all merchandise.
Very unique style of gem.
Yeah.
For it's... what is a very unique real life kind of gem, it's weird, but it's really cool.
The real life version of bismuth is very much a strange metal. Ever so slightly radioactive.
Made of cubes.
And has a sort of cube-like crystalline formation.
Cube-like crystalline rainbow formation.
And a very, very low conductivity. Which I'm sure is useful.
Yes.
For the sorts of activities that a bismuth might partake in.
Indeed. So Stephen pokes his head back in, and there's a gem now.
Yeah. This big, this like very huge and incredibly large grey gem. With sort of
rainbow hair and tattoos and an apron. Yeah.
And an apron, as you do, as you do.
Well,
and that is where we get the title card, Bismuth.
Yes, which is, I want to say, the first and potentially only...
I don't know.
...time we have a title card like this.
Might be.
Where it just fades in, and it's like kind of cool, but kind of ominous.
Yeah, and you have...
I don't know any other time, off the top of my head anyway, that we have that.
I don't know. You have this very signature bismuth instrument, because all the gems have their own instrument, which is sort of a like a slightly distorted electric guitar.
Yeah.
That's sort of being played at a high pitch.
It's certainly disturbing. Played here by... Miriam A. Hyman or Uzo Aduba or both. I'm not sure. This is confusing. I don't know if it one's the singing voice.
Uzo Aduba in this episode, at least.
Yeah, Uzo Aduba in this episode, who was also recently in Lightyear, apparently, which is cool. She's Alicia Hawthorne, who's great, and she was also Crazy Eyes in Orange Is the New Black. Very cool. Great voice actress, basically. But Steven's like, there's a gem.
Yeah. He pokes in and out, and Bismuth is just trying to understand what's going on. Bismuth is like immediately upon reforming, she goes into a fighting stance.
Yes, she certainly seems ready to be fighting something. Which to us, watching for the first time, just makes it seem like, you know, she's kind of, you know, what's going on? Which is, I suppose, kind of true, but there's a bit more to it on repeat viewings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When someone is poofed, and specifically in a bubble, time appears to not pass.
Not really pass, no.
But when they are not in a bubble and poofed, time does pass normally, because we see, like, Amethyst and Pearl, when they reform, they take differing amounts of time, because they are trying to think.
Mm-hmm.
But when you are in, when you're in a bubble, that sort of stasis is time.
Yep, indeed. So yeah, Stephen keeps popping his head back in and out, trying to figure out what she looks like. Because Pearl and Garnet certainly seem to recognize this description.
Exactly.
And so, again, this is kind of the amethyst being an outcast part of the story, which is, yeah, sort of connected to the last time, at least in part with the whole she wasn't about during the rebellion. But it's more just what makes her unsure and someone to kind of confide in with Stephen to make him question things more than a personal insecurity amethyst episode thing.
Yeah, I mean, sort of like, you know, when they say she's one of the original crystal gems, that,
yeah,
you know, that might feel kind of,
yeah, potentially
like you're being devalued if you're if you came in late.
Mm-hmm.
Unsure, but they are, the other two are certainly very, very surprised at Bismuth appearing, because the first thing that we get is Pearl running in for a hug.
Yep.
A big old hug. And they indeed have banter.
It's certainly really interesting.
I have great rapport, even though it's been 5,300 years, at least for Pearl and Garnet.
Like, they both, like, Pearl is basically crying, and Garnet seems shocked. Amethyst seems shocked because, I mean, Bismuth's pretty cool looking, but you know, they haven't met. But the other two of them seem, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Very, very shocked, that's for sure. Now we get,
yeah, they seem very close.
They're very close. And we learn that Bismuth is one of the original crystal gems.
Mm-hmm.
From very long ago. And Pearl says that Rose had said,
mm-hmm,
she lost her Bismuth at the battle for the Ziggurat, and that she was worried. And then Bismuth stopped smiling for a second, as she realized that isn't the entire truth.
It's a half-truth. But yeah, not a full truth. Which is a lot of what Rose told people, as it turns out.
Exactly. And Bismuth, of course, asks where Rose is.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
after having some introductions to Amethyst and Stephen.
Yeah, yeah. And Stephen makes what is possibly, again, not a great... Stephen's not very good at introducing himself as Rose's son, which is fair enough.
Yeah.
This one really didn't help, because saying she turned into me is not quite...
He hasn't quite grasped this himself.
No.
Yet.
No,
because making Stephen, for all intents and purposes, is the same as making a human baby.
Yes.
It's just Rose couldn't also exist while Stephen exists, but they are not the same.
No, exactly.
But he also doesn't, you know, I mean, and that's kind of one of the big things, you know, with him not quite understanding
who he is.
Because both, yes, you are your mum, but you're her legacy, you're not actually her, and it confuses other people as well as Stephen for most of the show.
Yeah.
And after the show.
The sort of reality is that Stephen is a human who has a gem in him,
yeah,
and that gem is Rose.
Mm-hmm.
But Stephen doesn't quite understand this yet.
Yeah.
And of course, the first thing Bismuth asks is like, "But do you have any of Rose's memories? Because if so, that would be kind of awkward."
Yeah.
But no.
Mm-hmm.
And Pearl says, "It's not always easy to understand Rose's choices, but we have to stand, mm-hmm, behind them."
Indeed.
which is kind of a perhaps a slightly subordinate mindset.
A little bit.
Perhaps a little bit.
But yeah, Bismuth seems to take this in her stride.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Rose literally is something else. And, you know, gets back into a kind of playful, banterous manner. But, you know, again, with the hindsight, it's like, ah, well, this Rose might have a different perspective.
This could be an opportunity.
Yeah.
And so they head to the battlefield because Bismuth is wondering where everyone else is.
Yeah, she's, like, tearing up the house. Well, not tearing up, but she's looking at the wood and wants Biggs and Snowflake, Crazy Legs. We will meet one day, but not yet.
Yeah, indeed. But as it turns out, it has been 5,300 years, and they're the only ones left.
Mm-hmm.
Homeworld's the sort of the attack that they made right at the end.
Yeah.
Wiped out everyone else, basically. And Bismuth assumes that that means that they were shattered, but they weren't.
They were not. They were still not shattered. I want to figure out where this place is, because it's all strawberries and there's floating islands.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I mean, clearly the Beatles have been there, but beyond them, like, I don't know who else has been there. Or where it is. I mean, obviously it's not real, but like, a lot of places have a, you know, like an analogous place, but
this yeah.
It's just like, nope, just fields of strawberries in the sky with floating rocks.
I'm sure we'll find out someday.
Maybe.
And yeah, as it turns out, the gems mention that Homeworld is still trying to get back at them, even after all this time.
Mm-hmm.
And the immediate reaction from Bismuth is, right, well, let's get right back at it, huh? War.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if they outnumber us or they have better technology.
Mm-hmm.
We're the crystal gems.
Yeah.
We'll just, like, win. Which is a great mindset to have, of course.
Mm-hmm. When it's tempered.
Perhaps it is recklessness, but also confidence is pretty good.
Mm-hmm. That's all Steven sees right now. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because he goes along with it.
Because, yeah, he doesn't quite understand how this can be a negative yet.
Hasn't quite understood the reality of war just yet, because if you're going to be taking it to the to Homeworld and the other gems,
mm-hmm.
that's going to involve poofing and shattering of gems.
Indeed.
And that's going to be something that Steven probably is going to be a bit less enthusiastic about. Indeed. But right now, he's pretty on board.
Mm-hmm.
And so they head to the forge.
They do.
And Stephen's asking Amethyst, or Stephen's asking and Amethyst is answering. That doesn't necessarily mean Stephen's asking Amethyst.
Mm-hmm.
But Amethyst is answering that in sort of slightly more irritation that she has no idea really what's going on.
No.
And I can understand that that might be a bit irritating. It's not being in on it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's like Pearl and Bismuth have this, like, kind of slightly flirtatious thing going on, and then Garnet and Bismuth are this very kind of, you know, siblings, not the right word, but like kind of brothers in arms or sisters in arms-esque kind of attitude with all, like, you know, kind of, you know, the meme of the predator, like, hand clap thing with the massive muscles. There's that kind of energy. And yeah, it's just like, this is an aside, because we've never seen them with the old crystal gems before. It's odd to Amethyst, where Steven's just kind of enamored by it all.
Yeah.
And yeah.
But this this perspective does reverse.
It does.
Once we reach the forge.
Indeed. Because Amethyst doesn't even know what a forge is.
Exactly.
We then get a weird thing, which we've never had before, about 7 minutes in, where it's like a little animatic to be like Steven Universe with all of them in kind of weird chibi anime form.
Yeah, it was like an ad break, except yeah. It was kind of an early ad break because it's
indeed
7 minutes in of a 20-minute episode.
Ooh, indeed.
Which is why that's not where we're ending part one.
Indeed. So yeah, they carry on. It seems to be in a volcano or something.
Yeah. And well, once the doors are finally finished opening,
mm-hmm.
we end up in this underground like workshop underneath a volcano, basically where it is.
It's very hard to get into if you're not a bismuth, and it's very cool.
Very cool. And when Bismuth hits the button,
mm-hmm.
the lava starts flowing.
It does. It's one of those odd bits to me where it's like, but they make their weapons. Why are the weapons when they make their own weapons? But I guess the principle is, you know, potentially you can make a stronger weapon than just the natural hard light weapons, or you can enhance them as Bismuth does.
Because Bismuth says that she made like all the material weapons.
Yeah, exactly.
The gems used in the gem war, but obviously that does not mean that she used all of the sort of the gem's own light weapons.
Yeah, exactly. It's just one of those odd things to me. But then it's like, I suppose the flip side is obviously Bismuth got bubbled. She could therefore make more weapons than everyone else got. Vanished, and so all the weapons stayed in strawberry fields and they didn't move them, so.
Although in, what was it, like?
Iron Rose's, like.
Which one was it? Sirius Steven, maybe?
Maybe.
It might have been Reformed, where they go into that area and they start taking some of the weapons.
True, yeah.
But it has been untouched for a very long time, that's for sure.
Indeed, yes. And yeah, Bismuth just bathes herself in lava. Because, you know, why not?
Exactly. And she does a little monologue at the same time as she is, like, blacksmithing a sword. She takes sort of some dust, crushes it, melts it, and then like hammers the metal into the right shape, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But as she's doing so, she is telling us that, you know, the job of a bismuth is to build things, obviously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To build things for the gem elite. She says that with sort of a disdainful tone. Mm-hmm. We already know pretty much what our character is here.
Yes.
But Rose, she still does hold a lot of respect for Rose even after what she did, which we'll find out.
Mm-hmm.
Told her that, you know, she could choose to do whatever she wanted, and so she chose to make weapons.
Yes, she is a weaponsmith.
That she is now a weaponsmith. Indeed. Very cool.
It is.
She has some upgrades.
She does.
Which she was working on before. And then she stops for a moment.
Yeah, so it is interesting because obviously, like, yeah, she says all the material weapons, so I generally like that they put that in. And it's clear, yeah, obviously, that you can combine these material weapons with the light weapons too, so. It still works. She gets some extra stabby bits on Garnet's gauntlets and a trident on Pearl's spear. Do those bits ever come back? Or
pretty sure they do.
pretty sure they do as well. I can't quite remember.
But Amethyst is still unsure.
Indeed.
Amethyst is a bit suspicious.
Mm-hmm. Especially when she uses the bismuth joke again.
Yeah, that's too far. That's a step too far. But
I like that. Well, it'd be really funny when she does a third time. Comedy comes in threes.
But never being told about bismuth by Rose or by Pearl or by Garnet.
Mm-hmm.
To Amethyst is a bit suspicious. Obviously, perhaps it is understandable. It could be a sore spot for them if they thought that she disappeared, that she was shattered.
Yeah.
And Stephen sort of cottons onto it. Yeah, that is a bit strange.
It is.
But then Bismuth, like, upgrades her whip, and immediately Amethyst, like, yeah, it's fine.
I mean, she starts off by, you know, being positive and complimentary to Amethyst, which is something Amethyst needs at the moment. Be like, oh, not every quartz can make a whip like this. And then also makes it into a spiked three-tailed flail, I guess.
Something like that.
Which, again, looks incredibly dangerous.
Definitely. That's what, absolutely what she wanted. Because she wants to beat Jasper. Anything, if you can do, well, if Amethyst wants to beat Jasper, then she clearly needs more of a punch. And that'll do it. But, as we'll see, perhaps that is not sort of the answer.
Indeed.
But it is nice that Bismuth sort of doesn't consider Amethyst to be inferior in any way.
No, she just, not at all. Goes,
yeah, you're cool.
Yeah.
Everyone is sort of worthy of her respect. And even if Bismuth isn't a perfect character, like a perfect person, she's certainly got a lot to respect about her. She's principled, even if those principles are slightly mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And from Amethyst's body language, we do still know that she is a bit insecure at the time.
Yeah. No, definitely. She's doing the classic arm grab, looking down at the floor thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that changes. And then they have a big old fight. Bismuth is talking about, like, oh, Homo did this and this thing, this. And, like, she's clearly radical. The way that she speaks about Homeworld and the way that she's so, like, you know, invested, obviously, all of them are, you know, rebels. You know, they're all part of the rebellion. But Bismuth very much feels like, like kind of a person who's like the person who honestly could probably have led the rebellion. If not for Rose being there and, you know, kind of motivates all the others in this big fight. And again, you've just got the, you know, these kind of different, like, playful but teasing mannerisms with Pearl and Garnet. And again, you know, Amethyst gets in on the action and, you know, it's just like very, very creative. Good job. Nice. Steven, join us. And Steven just kind of like
unsure about this
this violence. Which on the one hand, kind of strange because he does training all the time. But Bismuth is very physical.
Very physical.
Yeah. Seems a lot more like metal. Both in the literal and physical sense, I suppose.
Yes,
well, this Bismuth these massive hammers. So,
the is it the 84th element?
Oh, it's something like that. 84, 86, I think.
Yeah, because it's before
83rd.
83rd, dang.
Melting point, 271.4 degrees.
Yeah, which I'm pretty sure lava is hotter than, but because of the low conductivity, it's...
Indeed.
She could probably sustain being in lava for at least a little bit.
And then also...
That's why she gets all red.
It's hard light as well. So.
Yeah, exactly. Interest... You could probably... What you could do from all of this is you could definitely say that Bismuth is a populist.
Yes, that's the word I was looking for.
Populist is not necessarily a bad thing.
Nope.
It is often used as a pejorative.
Mm-hmm.
But what it means in essence for the viewers is someone who appeals to this notion of the people versus the elites.
Yes.
Which can, of course, sometimes be misguided because the elites is a very... is kind of broad.
Yeah.
Obviously, for this, in this case, Bismuth is referring to the gem aristocracy, basically.
Primarily, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the diamonds, and they are, and they're sort of highest nobles of the highest order, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's what we could count Bismuth as, and we're sort of seeing here how this, and she's obviously very radical, like you said.
Yeah,
and we're gonna see in the next part why. Why this isn't, or why at least the show frames it as potentially not the best idea.
Why, from Rose and Stevens and a cartoon show for kids perspective.
Yes.
It's potentially not great.
Obviously, this isn't going to have the academic rigor of like a journal article that's been peer-reviewed.
No, not at all.
It's pretty good. It's a good showcase of it.
But yeah, so she tries to get Steven in on it, and he's like, actually, I'd rather do some other stuff. And they do some badminton, which, you know, Bismuth's very enthusiastic for, but a bit too powerful. They do cards. Amethyst tries to cheat. Garnet's already cheating because future vision. That one seems to go a bit better. They try doing pizza. She's very good at that.
Yeah. And then they watch a movie.
Which is, you know, Lonely Blade's just in everything.
It is. Now,
TV and all sorts, and yeah, it's an ultimate power weapon, but
obviously,
it's a magic sword, and everyone knows what magic swords do.
Yeah,
bad first, things, they always do bad things.
Yeah, Bismuth goes like it's sort of the logical option for someone to use the sword with the most power,
indeed.
But without understanding that with a lot of power comes the possibility for corruption. And that is what happens to Lonely Blade.
Yeah, because it's a dark sword. It has dark power.
Now.
The Demon Blade.
When I first watched this, I was like... I wasn't super sure about this bit with the... with Steven sort of showing Bismuth the ropes of human lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But actually, she's really enjoying it.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
She's just having a great time.
She's enjoying spending time with her friends. She likes the new company. Sure, not everything works with what she's like, but, you know, she's willing to try anything. She gets into a lot of it. And yeah, she's having a grand old time.
Exactly.
Indeed. Next time we will discuss how things change. As this is kind of the point where we're gonna stop discussing future parts of the episode. We'll do that next week. But
yeah.
But yeah, as interesting as it is, because I do, it will be very interesting to hear what your thoughts are, because I don't entirely disagree with Bismuth's thinking.
Is that you?
No, I don't. I understand why Rose clearly had a very large problem with it, as the show goes into.
Yes.
But it's definitely an interesting ethical quandary as well.
Yeah, it's without... a question that has been posed by a lot of cartoons and anime shows.
Yes.
That is...
Avatar does it.
When
kind of
going up against oppression,
mm-hmm.
to what extent should you use violence?
Indeed.
Yeah, Avatar has done that. Ruby has done that. Even if it hasn't, like, even if it isn't the most fleshed out, it has done it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It did explore that topic.
What
with
was
the
that?
Whole White Fang.
Yes. No, yes, absolutely. No, I mean, it's one of the better parts. It's not perfect by any means, but...
No, I wouldn't say it's perfect, but it definitely
I mean,
does
that's
it.
That's one of the interesting things about, like, you know, like, in... This is just going to be kind of broader topic now, because we're kind of done with the main aspect of the episode, but now, like, with Ruby, with the White Fang, the... You know, it's like the... Humans are oppressing the Faunus. If you've not watched Ruby, this is gonna just be a whole load of nonsense, but don't worry.
Spoilers.
Spoilers as well, yeah. Watch the anime version. You'll probably be less disappointed. I'm joking. Watch both, because it goes in a very different direction from what I've seen so far, and both are cool. But yeah, it's like the issue being that they are, or at least some of them are, completely indiscriminate amongst who they target and who they don't target, and who is bad and who is good, because to them, or at least to Adam and his followers, the quote-unquote elite is humans. Because it is. But also, that's so many people that you're then just further turning against yourselves. Whereas kind of, you know, with Avatar, it's a bit different to that. Whereas, you know, we do have situations in Avatar where there are Fire Nation people who are perfectly decent, and there are non-Fire Nation people who are, you know, really terrible and everything in between. And whilst most of the Fire Nation is living in this fantasy land of we are the greatest nation and this is our way of showing ourselves to the world through this war, you know, a lot of the individual people there still aren't actually quote-unquote bad.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, yeah, the danger you always run into, really, with it. Like, Bismuth, in some respects, reminds me of Saw Gerrera from Star Wars. Don't know how much Saw you will have seen. Have you seen Rogue One?
I've seen Rogue One.
The bold guy who looks after Jin as a child in Rogue One, who's leader of the Partisans. He's like basically a cyborg by the end, and he's really paranoid about everything.
Okay, yeah.
Him, because he's in. You see him for the first time in Clone Wars, and then you see him in Bad Batch, and we're going to see him in Andor, which is exciting, and we see him in Rebels. And he's basically been fighting oppression of some kind his whole life. And I'm not going to say too much more, because I am hoping that eventually you'll get yourself through Rebels, through Clone Wars first, and there are some interesting arcs with him. But, like, yeah, for him it's just, there's always an oppressor, and you've always got to be fighting back, and he's considered largely too violent by most of the rest of the Rebellion, who are still, you know, happy to use violence. But they are much more, I suppose, quote-unquote, terrorists than the larger Rebellion likes to associate themselves with. And it's still for the same cause, and, you know, they still believe the ends justified the means, and I think Bismuth falls into a similar category for stuff we will get into next time.
Yeah, obviously we don't know everything about Bismuth's ideology.
I do think there was an interesting parallel between her talking about, well, if it's the most powerful weapon, then he should use it.
Yeah, that's foreshadowing that.
Which is, it's not identical, but it's very similar.
It is.
Yes.
Terrorism is, there's sort of a difference between terrorism and, like, fighting oppression.
Well, exactly, as well. One man's freedom fighter is another man's terrorist, or vice versa.
Generally, terrorism is, involves the targeting of people who aren't necessarily the bad people that you are
not
trying,
like,
to...
Yeah, strategic targets or military targets or something.
Yeah.
It is just general terror.
So they are symbolic targets.
Indeed.
They're representing some greater evil or the elites that you're targeting.
Indeed.
But they themselves aren't necessarily the elites.
Yeah. That's what's, again, quite interesting about, well, Rogue One and also just Andor. I don't know how much you don't follow Star Wars stuff that much, but the Andor series, which you got a trailer for yesterday, is going to deal a lot more with the kind of everyday grunt level rebellion stuff. And probably a lot of the, you know, the rebellion's a good course, but that doesn't mean that every single action that they did was good.
That's nice.
And it's going to be very interesting. Also getting Mon Mothma and political stuff, but it's very exciting and complete tangent. So, but yeah, exactly.
Makes me think of, like, the Andor Genesis from Exevius.
Fair.
I can't stop thinking about that.
It just makes me think of and or being two words that you use in...
And slash or...
Yeah, exactly. for Steven Universe, this episode will, in its second half, certainly change some things quite drastically.
Exactly.
For this is pretty much the, there's been a few of them, but this one's really the kind of death of innocence, whatever the term is, kind of.
Yeah,
episode.
That's when things really get down to Bismuth.
And with that being said, we'll leave this one here. So yeah, that was amazing. thank you for listening, and we will see you next time for the conclusion to this episode. Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Cabincast. For more episodes, go to www.cabincast.podbean.com or use the Podbean app. You can now also find us on iTunes and Pocket Casts under Cabincast and on YouTube. There are those here on my mind. Finally, you can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/cabincast. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.